All right, so getting to our show, sex trafficking is a human crisis, and we must recognize and confront it. Raising awareness about the horrific realities of sex trafficking will help us to recognize the signs of trafficking and ways we can make a difference in our own community. Joining me this morning to learn more on sex trafficking and ways we can ignite change is my guest, Rhonda Kruckendahl.
That's right. That's perfect.
Rhonda serves on the Texas Human Trafficking Survivor Leader Council. She works as the anti-child trafficking consultant for Texas CASA. She also chairs the Fort Bend County DA's Human Trafficking Community Awareness Team and serves on the board of directors of Child Advocates of Fort Bend, where she chairs their legislative advocacy team. Good morning, Rhonda. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I am doing very well, and I'm very excited to be with y'all today. And we're starting January, which is the National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. So I can't think of a better place to be than right here with y'all.
Yes, that's perfect. And, you know, you mentioned that earlier this morning, and I was like, wow, this is a great time for us, especially in our community, in our South Asian community to raise awareness. Mm-hmm. There's so many questions that we need to clarify and get a better picture of sex trafficking, of it's a crisis. It's a global crisis. We all know that. And there's so much we can do as a community, right? So we're really looking forward to this hour with you learn a lot from you.
Thank you.
So Rhonda, let me start with you, how you got about being involved and, you know, the passion. Like I've talked to you a couple of times, I've met you, and, you know, we've talked about human trafficking, sex trafficking, and, you're in so many organizations too. And so, you know, share a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I am a survivor of trafficking. So much about the background that I've learned I fit into, and then others, I'm an anomaly. My trafficking occurred when I was 10 years old, which is abnormal to be trafficked at such a young age. But after being trafficked, I spent many years in silence. And when I decided to find my trafficker, it was the early part of 2000, 2003, 2004. And I found him. He had been convicted four times, three different states. All sex trafficking crimes, compelling prostitution, sexual performance by a child. And I found out he was getting out of prison. And there was nothing I could do. And I did take several steps to find out what I could do. And every step, it was closed doors. And so it sent me to the Texas legislature. And what I did, it took 5 years, over two legislative sessions, and I abolished the statute of limitations against child sexual assault. You have to remember, back then, the terminology sex trafficking didn't exist. We didn't have the language or the verbiage to go along with what was happening to us. Mm-hmm. And so I was trafficked out of Fort Bend County. Just like trafficking occurs today, it happened to me where I was taken into Houston first, and then I was eventually flown to Lubbock. And it wasn't only me, it was me and my siblings as well. We were never together. We were always alone. One would go, one would come back, the other one would go and then come back. And so after I passed this bill in Austin, I stepped away and I raised my two children. And once my kids were grown, they're graduated college and they're on their own, I decided to reconnect to this field. And when I did, I found out there is so much more information, so many organizations doing great things. And I just recently went back to get my degree in social work. So I have just about a little over, I've got one semester left for my bachelor's in social work, and I've applied to the master's program at UH Central, and where I'm going to be working on administrative social work with an emphasis on public policy. My goal is to be in Austin working on legislation.
So let's begin with the definition. What is sex trafficking?
So I just kind of mentioned about how we didn't have the language and we didn't have the bills. The first bill that was passed, it's called the Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000. That is a federal bill, and that bill covers all of the states, right? So it really defined what sex trafficking is. And the best way to describe it to you is through what's called an AMP model, action means purpose model. You have to have something in each column in order for sex trafficking to be able to be charged. So the first action, it has to be either induce, recruit, harbor, transport, provide, or obtain. And the means is through force, fraud, or coercion. And the purpose is for a commercial sex act. So you wonder, what is the definition of a commercial sex act? When you trade something of value for sex, that's commercial sex. Okay. A lot of times that is money, but it doesn't have to be. It can also be trading a place to stay and a place to eat. And so we have to remember also that for victims under the age of 18, that middle piece, the force, fraud, and coercion is not needed. So again, I have to reiterate, if a victim is under the age of 18 and engaged in commercial sex, it is trafficking.
Okay. Wow. And so how common is sex trafficking?
You know, when we talk numbers, you can go on the internet and you can find tons of information and statistics, actually numbers that conflict with each other. And so it's very difficult. You have to remember that this is a crime that it's hard to quantify because it's done in secret. I am going to give you a few numbers, though, that are by state government agencies and also vetted peer-reviewed journals that have happened. So what we know is that 27 million, according to the U.S. State Department, 27 million people across the globe are trafficked. That's both sex and labor trafficking. If you take it down to the state level where we are, there was a study that was done by the University of Texas in 2016. When I give you these numbers, though, we don't know where we stand in 2023 because this was done in 2016. Right. You can imagine that there's an increase, but we don't have the data to prove that. So back in 2016, they found that 313,000 people were being human trafficked in Texas at that given point. Yeah. That's both labor and sex. Of those numbers, 79,000 were what's considered domestic minor sex trafficking. Those are kids that are being trafficked. So for the domestic minor sex trafficking field in the state of Texas, it's about a $6.6 billion industry. Whoa. It is huge. And again, it's done in secret. A lot of times you hear hidden in plain sight. That's another way that it's been termed. And so what we know is, and again, victimization typically is from like age 15 to 17. Mm-hmm. I was 10, so you always have those anomalies as well.
Yeah.
There's another statistic, though, that's really fascinating. And it's we have a lot of current trends talking about this now. And I'm actually going to read this quote so I don't get it wrong. This was done by the Trafficking in Persons. It was a study that was done in 2019. And it said that traffickers exploit 77% of all their victims in the victim's country of residence. So we hear a lot about trafficking coming across the border right now. And there is a lot of misinformation in regards to what is trafficking and what is smuggling. Those are two different things. Does it occur? Absolutely, it does occur. But does it occur to the magnitude of what we're hearing on the media? Mm-hmm. We don't have evidence of that. So what we see today is that we used to think that trafficking is this transnational type of issue, right?
Right.
People coming across the border and being trafficked in the United States. What we have found that there is a much more common variety, and that is Americans exploiting Americans. So we want to make sure that we always speak truth to this. There is one form of trafficking, again, that doesn't follow that rule, and that is the trafficking that occurs within our illicit massage businesses. Okay. So a lot of the victimization that happens within these facilities come from women that have been brought over from Thailand, Vietnam, Korea. They're brought here with the promise of a prosperous, good job. And when they get here, their passport is taken away. Their documents are taken away. They don't speak the language. And so there's this isolation and there's no way to get out. So that's one form of trafficking. You know, when you speak of trafficking, you always speak in these broad general terms. And there's always exceptions to the terms as well. And so you have to be very careful in how you discuss it.
Yeah. So, Rhonda, can you walk us through the stages of exploitation? How does it all start? Like, give us a scenario, you know, because many times, like you just mentioned, it could be getting a woman from another country, but also at the same time, it's within our own circle, right?
Absolutely. So what you have to think about first when you talk about how it occurs is who's most vulnerable, who's at risk. Hmm. So we automatically go to our at-risk communities, and it is true. It is adults and children that have been sexually abused, physically abused, children that are in the child welfare system or children in the juvenile justice system. They are at an increased risk for trafficking. That population has high incidences of running away. When you run away, it automatically increases your risk of being trafficked. You have nowhere to stay. you have a lot more increased vulnerabilities. We do know, though, with the advent of social media, cell phones, and the internet, traffickers now have different ways of contacting our kids and youth. And so it's a wider net. And social media is one of the number one ways that traffickers and recruiters, so recruiters recruit for the traffickers and turn victims over to the traffickers. That's the way it's happening today. Without, you know, in our at-risk community, but with our everyday kids, you know, I know of a two-parent live in a gated community. Their daughter was trafficked. They were contacted through social media. So it is happening through social media quite often.
Okay. And sometimes also with in relationships too.
That's meeting a recruiter in school. That's happened as well, where you think it's a boyfriend and you think that, you know, it's a love interest. And then all of a sudden, slowly, it turns into trafficking.
Okay. And so what is grooming?
So grooming is the process that traffickers and recruiters will use to gain access to victims. There's like a five-step process where it's first talking about befriending. How do recruiters and traffickers have access to kids? You know, one of the ways that we're talking about in regards to social media is like they'll go on social media, TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, and throw out about 300 messages and see who bites back. See who talks back to them.
It's like a bait.
It is a bait and switch. Uh-huh. And so, one of the main ways that traffickers and recruiters obtain their victims is looking for vulnerabilities. And, you know, kids have more vulnerabilities, but everybody does. Adults have vulnerabilities. And they are very keen on looking for that vulnerability. And then they put themselves in a position where they will be the only one that can fulfill that need with that person. And that's where the isolation comes in. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they befriend, and then you see this intoxicate. When you say the word intoxicate, we know that drugs and alcohol are used. But intoxication can also happen by Louis Vuitton bags. Intoxication can come from, they call it this honeymoon phase where everything's wonderful and you don't realize where you are. And then all of a sudden you see this isolation. They begin to isolate you from your friends, from your family. And it's a slow desensitization process that happens until they eventually, you know, capitalize. And when I say capitalize, I don't mean that they grab somebody, abduct them, and throw them in the car. I mean, we do have what's called guerrilla pimps. And those are traffickers that mainly use force, that will abduct. But that percentage is so very rare. It is a mind abduction. It is a slow process. Of a victim will walk with a trafficker and be with them, and they're their friends, they're their loved one, they're their partner, and then it turns bad, and there's no way out.
Wow. And I guess it's, you know, our listeners are listening, and you know, we have people watching us live too, and I'm sure the parents are so disturbed. In the sense, like, you know, it's not only strangers, right? We keep teaching our kids, be careful of strangers. But sometimes it's our own family member. It could be anyone within our family that could even be involved in it. So, you know, couple of tips and advice for our, you know, listeners.
Sure.
For the parents.
You know, there's a statistic that when a child is sexually assaulted, in 90% of the times, they know their attacker and the family knows their attacker. And so that goes with what you're saying. It may be a family member. It may be a babysitter. It may be a babysitter's older brother. It could be a coach. So it's all of these people that have access to our kids. But before I get to the tips and tricks, I also want to explain what sextortion is.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because that's very important, because that is one of the number one tools that traffickers will use to gain access. And so you wonder, like, what is this terminology? It's a combination of the word sext and extortion. And it's manipulating a person to send inappropriate images, to do inappropriate things on camera, or eventually to meet up with that perpetrator. It's estimated that 1 in 7 kids online will be exposed to sextortion. So how does it happen? You know, we talk about our kids. Our kids grew up with the internet. Yeah. I did not. I mean, I didn't have it as a kid or in high school.
Exactly.
And so it's a completely different environment that kids are in. And they actively, constantly talk to people online that they don't know. This needs to be the number one tip that you give parents, is instill in your children. If you don't know them as a person in real life, then don't believe who they are saying they are. And the reason why is because a child or an adult, sextortion happens with adults just as much as it happens with kids. You begin talking to somebody online, you see pictures of who you think they are, they ask for a photograph of you. And it doesn't even have to be a nude. It could be a young girl wearing her bra and panties. And once that perpetrator has that image, that's when the sextortion begins. They will take a screenshot of all of their friends on Instagram and say, if you don't give me more photos, I'm going to send this image out to all of your contacts. I'm going to contact your mom. I'm going to contact your dad. And what that feeling is for that person is shame, guilt, isolation. And there is a direct correlation between sextortion and suicide. And so when children have no way out, they resort to suicide. And it's a very sad statistic. One of the things that we have is there is a Facebook group called Our Voice in Texas. And there's a guide on it, and that guide is sextortion. And so it will take you through. It'll take you through modules that you can sit down and share with your kids. And then it gives you the YouTube video of Amanda Todd. Amanda Todd was a very young girl who was being sextorted, and she committed suicide after she photographed, after she did a video and posted it on YouTube. And so I know it's a very difficult topic.
Yes.
But we take away the power when we educate our kids, when we give them the knowledge. And so the resources that are out there to begin talking about this with our kids at a very, very young, early age, when you give them the terminology of sextortion. And so it is always a good thing for to educate and aware, just like we're doing today.
Yeah. But like, how do you start this conversation? I'm just thinking as a parent.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, how early would
like,
you start?
Like, two boys.
Yeah,
right?
I have boys. They are like 8 and 12. So how early? Because you said it happened to you at 10.
Exactly.
You know.
So, you know, there are tools and tips that you can use for both older kids and younger kids. And really, to summarize it, and I'm going to go into detail with them, but we have to start opening that dialogue and that communication. And that's hard because this is an uncomfortable topic.
Very, yes.
And so what we do also on Our Voice in Texas, there's another guide that's called Resources, and it has a wonderful resource, and it's called Keeping Kids Safe in the Digital Age. This is actually a picture of it.
Okay. Mm.
This is done by Street Grace. And Street Grace is a nonprofit that's working in the Fort Bend County area right now. It covers sextortion along with many other topics dealing with trafficking. This workbook is meant for a parent or a caregiver to take and use with their children, with their niece, with their neighbor, whoever you feel needs this information. Yeah. And it's really good because it goes over a subject matter. And then it has a whole questions and answers that you sit down and talk to your kids about it.
Yeah.
And then it gives resources for that topic. And so it's very, I urge everybody to go through this with their kids. But when you talk about what age do we start? I can tell you what I did with my kids. My kids are now 24 and 25. At a very, very young age, the first thing you do is you teach your kids the biological parts of their body. We don't make up little pet names for them. There has been incidences and evidence that kids have tried to tell people what was happening to them and they didn't understand because they weren't using the biological terms. So what you do whenever you use those biological terms, you also, in effect, begin these conversations at a very young age, right? Okay. It normalizes it. You begin to talk about it. As kids get a little bit older, that's when I would use these workbooks and stuff. And so what are different ways that you can talk to your kids without scaring them, right?
Yes.
Because we don't want them to believe that every person they see is going to harm
them. Exactly. Yes.
A really sad fact of my reality is I was probably in my mid-30s, and I remember standing on my back porch, and I remember thinking, there are more good people in the world than bad people. Like, it had to hit me because I didn't feel that. Like, I didn't see that. A natural inclination that I had anywhere I went, I would walk into a room and I would scan. This has an impact on your mental health because you don't realize you're doing it because it's a coping mechanism that you've brought from being abused at such a young age for such a long period of time. And so when I realized, wow, there are more good people in the world than bad people, we want to make sure that we don't scare our kids. And so you open up that dialogue. you learn with them, right? You're not telling them, dictating things. Like, mom doesn't know this, but let's go figure it out together.
Yeah.
Some other topics that you can talk about, especially with young kids, is scenarios. Mm-hmm. You know, like, for example, you can ask your child, hey, like, what would you do if your babysitter made you feel really icky? What would you do if you felt uncomfortable? You know, and keep talking to them. What if you're at a friend's house and they want to play a game that you're not, you don't feel good about? What do you do?
Yes.
Have those conversations. Talk to them. It gives these reasoning skills to kids and it builds resiliency to where they'll know what to do.
Yes.
You know, another thing is boundaries. And we have done a poor job at this because we've always said, you know, go hug Aunt so-and-so or give Uncle so-and-so a kiss.
Yeah.
That, in effect, is taking away the agency that a child has over their own body.
Yes.
And that's actually on us as parents, not them. So that's something that we as parents have to change in our dialogue and working with kids to let them know you have a right to who you want to touch your body at all times. We also need to explain tricks. You know, we always say, like, you have to keep this a secret, or, and then you may be doing a surprise party and your parent will say, well, we have to keep this a secret. And that's confusing to kids.
Yeah.
So what are the difference between a good secret and a bad secret? Oh. A bad secret is a trick.
Yeah.
The best way for me to explain that is a trick was used on me at 10. I was told, you wanted to be a model. And so this is what happens to models. And if you tell anyone what we're doing, they're going to know it was your fault. Because you wanted to be a model. Now, would that reasoning work on an adult? No. Would it work on a 10-year-old? Yes. Yeah. And so when we as adults are trying to think about this, we can't think of it through the lens of an adult. We have to think of it through the lens of a child and what would work on a child and what would not work on an adult. And so that's why it's so very important to talk about these tricks and stuff. Another really good tactic to use is use trusted adults. You know, sometimes kids just don't want to tell their mom or their dad. It's too hard. So pick two or three people in your life and introduce them to your child as, look, if there's ever anything you don't want to tell me, go to so-and-so, go to so-and-so. Give them options to be able to have a choice in this. And again, it all boils down to open communication and talking about it. And the more you talk about it, like, I know you probably get like a lump in your throat the first time you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. This book helps. This book helps tremendously with that because you're just going through a workbook. But the more you do it, the more often you do it, the more you talk about it. You also want your child, like, if something uncomfortable happens, it doesn't mean that anything bad is happening. But they would say, hey, mom, you know, this happened and I'm not really sure how to process this. It made me feel really uncomfortable. When you give them that dialogue to talk about it, that increases the chances they're going to come and talk to you.
Wow.
Yeah, we have to change our ways.
Like, yes,
I'm just
for
thinking,
sure,
you know, like our parenting skills have to change in so many ways because we give them directions, right? We say, no, you got to do this. And then sometimes we don't even give them a reason and they kind of just, you know, listen to you or whatever. But what you're saying is great that, you know, put it as a question to them. Let them think.
Yes.
And let them process it.
Yes.
And that way you are
they
changing.
Have the skills to, you know, do it when they are adults, right? Instead of, I feel like as parents, we are so authoritative. I mean, maybe because we were brought up that way, you know?
Right.
So you're always looking to someone else to tell you now what to do or how, like how to fix it. But if you're, like you said, if you're giving them the skills that early to process and then come out with the solution, I mean, that's a win-win, right?
Well, and you have to think too about what are people being bombarded with?
We're going to take a quick break.
Oh, okay.
This is
a great time.
Great time. Yes.
All right. So let's go on a quick break. And when we come back, we will continue our conversation with Rhonda. This is Chai Time on 99.5 FM. Welcome back to Chai Time on 99.5 FM. We are in conversation with Rhonda. We've been talking about sex trafficking. And before we went on break, Leila and myself were, you know, asking you, Rhonda, like, how do we talk to kids, right? And that's the step by step you were explaining to us. So let's continue with that. And we are talking about younger kids. And then after that, we do want to hit the teenagers as well.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I think we've covered pretty much with the younger kids, all of the information that you can. Everything that we talked about with the younger kids, you can also do with the older group. But with the older group, an older group is typically teenagers. You can do other things like discuss exit strategies. For example, talk to your child and say, look, you're at a party, kind of like the same strategy you use with the younger kids, but you're at a party and your friends left you. That actually happened one time to my daughter. So you get left at a party and a boy you don't even know, you don't know him, ask, hey, I'll take you home. What do you do? Have that conversation with them. Don't answer it for them. Let them sit with it.
Okay.
Hopefully you've had this discussion, because one of the tactics to help older kids is to either give them a ride sharing app. And I know that there's a lot of controversy about ride share right now and how it can be dangerous. And the other thing is, just like using trusted adults, you can ask two or three of your friends, hey, if my child ever calls you and they need a ride, would you be willing to do it? Give your child those names. Again, kids are empowered when they have choices to be able to navigate that. And so it's always good to have those discussions. You know, when they're older, you can actually begin talking to them about words that traffickers use. You know, they may talk about dating, or they may talk about trying out, or, you know, breaking out, or all of those types of words. As you educate them more, it only opens up that dialogue. This is never meant to be the sex talk, where you sit down one time and you have this conversation that's difficult. It's meant to open up a dialogue of conversation that will last throughout their entire youth up into adulthood. And then we're going to raise a group of adults now that can turn around and teach their kids as well, because we've taught them a different way to do it. And it also prevents this idea of fear when it becomes a natural thing that you talk about all the time. We also, with older kids, we want to talk about addressing myths and misconceptions about sex trafficking. I would say probably 99% of the time, if you found the information on TikTok, it's probably wrong. You know, I mean, I've seen zip ties on car doors. I've seen t-shirts around windshield wipers. I've seen people giving hand signs in a mall saying I'm being trafficked. And all of that is coming from unvetted sources. And we'll just take one, the hand sign.
Okay.
Although at its surface, it looks like it would be a great thing to teach somebody, right? But for somebody that's being trafficked, that word trafficking is our word. It's not their word. They don't know that word. They don't understand trafficking. They believe that it's their fault. They chose this, and this is what's happening to them. They don't understand it's a crime. So if you're asking for a trafficking victim to make a sign that they're being trafficked,
that's
just not going to happen. Now, can we make a sign for somebody that's being abducted? Absolutely. Yeah. That's a very rare time. I mean, it's not as common. Does happen, but it's not as common. But that's a whole different dialogue. And so we have to make sure that we are speaking truth. And the reason why this is so very important is because when we focus in on the myths of sex trafficking, we're not focusing in on what's really happening. And so we're losing opportunities to help and educate society, communities, families, children. And so there's just so much information out there.
Yeah, and it starts with us. We have to educate ourselves first before we can even reach to the kids itself, right? So that is so important. And this is what we are learning today, this morning.
Yes,
like, there's so many things. It's such an eye-opener for the two of us
here. Yeah, my eyes are wide open.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And having kids, you know, it's even more so. We are more trying to be.
But I'm glad you're sharing resources and books, because, you know, when there's something in your hand tangible, like as a parent, I think it's better, because you have that information right there and you can go over it, like you said, like a workbook, you know?
It kind of just, it helps with the stress of it, right?
Yes.
Because then you know what you need to cover.
Yeah,
and
it's all everything on one, instead of going on your website and then trying to download this from here and that from there. It's all in one.
So there's wonderful resources from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children as well. And they've done it cartoon-based. So it's really for younger kids.
Okay.
There's NCMEC videos for sextortion and online safety. And all of that can be found in those guides. And so we'll make sure that I give y'all all of the links to where you can put it on there so people can gain access to that. And the guides are really great because you can literally just go from 1 to 5 and click on each link and see what's there and what resources you can use.
Okay, that's awesome.
And you know, another thing is we have to talk about like cultural norms.
Yes.
What our society is doing and what's out there. We do know that movies and music and even the prevalence of pornography, it desensitizes us, and it has this normalizing effect for buying sex. And so that's something that we have to work against. If you go on Amazon, you can actually buy books that are produced by traffickers on how to sex traffic. It's pretty horrific to actually, I've bought one or two just to read them and understand the book. But even more insidious are the movies that aren't as out there, but still have the same effect. For example, Pretty Woman. I've heard like every Halloween, there's a lot of people that still dress up as a prostitute, as Julia Roberts. And it definitely glamorizes what goes on in sex trafficking. And it does so much hardship to the reality of it. We also had here, and it was actually based in LaGrange, Texas, which is not far from where I live. You know, the best little whorehouse in Texas. I mean, if you look up that movie, it's actually listed as a musical comedy. It is awful. It is awful when you look at it through the lens of, you know, working in an anti-trafficking space.
Yes.
People do not understand how it normalizes all of this. Yeah. You look at the music industry, you know, Jay-Z had a song called Pimpin'.
Yeah.
Every time I mention this, people will tell me, well, Jay-Z said he was sorry. He was really sorry for writing that song. Yeah. Mm. That song, I don't even give the lyrics to because it is real. It is real. Here's what Jay-Z didn't do. He didn't take money that he made off of that song and devote it to nonprofits in the anti-trafficking communities, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there is so much of it out there. I think Seinfeld had an episode where Frasier dressed up as a pimp. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be. There were movies and television shows that are Pimp My Ride or food porn. We hear the word porn used quite often.
Yes.
It's like we're co-opting language from trafficking and normalizing it in our everyday language. And it's something that I know I personally am very careful not to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't even think about this stuff, right? But I'm so glad we're having this conversation. So if it comes up with your kids, I'm just thinking from kids' perspective, you'd put a stop to it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Wow. So, Rhonda, you know, we are addressing that education is key, right?
Yes.
But in your opinion, do you think that high school, middle schools should start addressing or talking about sex trafficking?
Absolutely. And again, it goes from normalizing the conversation in the education. We were on a path to right now, in order to have this type of curriculum and education in classrooms, you had what's called an opt-out. So we're going to teach it. If you as a parent don't want your child to learn this, then you can opt out. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, this past legislature, it changed it to an opt-in. That makes the education extremely difficult to occur. You think about how busy parents are and filling out paperwork. And so it makes it almost impossible to teach our kids in school about trafficking and what it looks like. And it should be done under the banner of health and safety.
Yeah.
And it's right now it's not being done.
It's not.
And it is, you know, there was some legislation that was passed called No Trafficking Zone. And what that bill, we have a nonprofit, a fabulous nonprofit here in the Houston area called No Trafficking Zone. And it created a no trafficking zone around a school, which meant that if you recruited a victim of trafficking within a school zone or during school hours or at a school event, there was an increase in penalties. There was an increase in upcharge in charging crimes. And so, and that brought some awareness to the schools. But we still have not been able to crack that getting into the schools to educate. Schools have so much to accomplish.
Yes.
My daughter is a high school algebra teacher. And so the time that she has or the time that schools have, but it is vitally important. And it has to be done in a way that it's not a one and done. You know, we've thought about going into the clubs. These clubs, you know, kids have tons of clubs and sports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And using that as an opportunity to be able to have these discussions on an ongoing basis. So there's another organization. It's called Real Friends Don't. The website is realfriendsdon't.org. And the premise of this website is Real Friends Don't Cause Harm, whatever that is. And it is an anti-trafficking website. That's also a great avenue for parents to log into. Mm-hmm. And I believe on Real Friends Don't, they have groups that can be created within high schools that are anti-trafficking groups. That's another way that it can be done, where you have these youth councils, these youth boards that are aware of trafficking.
Yeah. So do you think the conversation things have changed, you know, compared to previous years or even, you know, now that after the pandemic, has things really changed for the better or are we just going, you know, like two steps back? How are things progressing or not progressing?
So we are definitely in a better environment in communicating. Okay. If you think about it, my victimization was in 1981. Hmm. Yes, I'm very old. Back then, we did not even have the language to be able to describe what was happening to us. Nobody talked about it. You were in silence. Now, at least there are nonprofits that work in this field. You know, there's Elijah Rising, Demand Disruption, Hands of Justice. You know, Hands of Justice just put out this book. They're getting ready to do a film of the book. And this was a book that took into consideration the stories of 20 survivors of trafficking. And it shows the diversity of trafficking. There's 19 different survivors, and they all have a different story to tell. And so they're talking about how it happens in all of these different, how it happens in gangs, mm-hmm. how it happens in families, how it happens in child pornography. And so you have this overview of an education. Is it an easy read? Absolutely not. But what they did in this book, which was just fascinating, is they took the book and they took the survivor story and they sent it to an artist. Without ever meeting the survivor, that artist drew a picture.
Oh.
And that's what's included in the book. Mm. And so you can't, I mean, I'm telling you, this right here is my story. And so this image right here, I've got the original artwork in my office.
Oh, wow.
And so it's educational because it talks about the type of trafficking and resources and facts and statistics. And it's all peer review. I mean, not peer review, but it all has all of the resources and references in the back where the information comes from. So it's another good book to get an overview of what you're looking at.
Yeah. Okay. So these books are available. How do people...
This one is available on Amazon.
Okay.
And it's also in my book list in that guide section. So there's a whole list of books that you can go out and read.
Yeah. And we'll share the links
absolutely.
On our page as well. So as a community, what measures should we take if sex trafficking is operating in our neighborhood?
Well, you know, I think, you know, we have this very common phrase, see something, say something, right? I think it was a president's wife. I don't even remember who it was. It said it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. I definitely subscribe to that. I feel like we should all have our eyes and our ears out to be able to watch for this. In Fort Bend County, there is sex trafficking that goes on in subdivisions, in our communities. And so what could you possibly look for that would be reported? Well, if you look at a house and you see a bunch of young males and females coming and going, they don't look related, right? They're not related by family. They come in at all hours of the night. You'll see cars coming and going. What you may see is like some members of the family look depressed, wearing really like bad, shabby clothing. They may look tired, exhausted. It's almost one of those things where you pass by the house or you live on the street and you look at the house and see something and you're like, that seems odd. Mm-hmm. For the majority of us, what we're going to do is that's none of my business.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, it's the same thing. I do work also in airports because I was flown. I was a 10-year-old in an airport after being continually raped. Nobody saw me. Nobody saw me in the airport. Nobody saw me in school. Nobody mm-hmm. saw me in the child welfare system. So it's like, and it's because people get a gut feeling and then they don't do anything mm-hmm. with it.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is if you see something that's concerning, report it. Our Fort Bend County District Attorney has made it his mission to work on human trafficking in Fort Bend County. And so call the DA's office and talk about it. If it isn't anything, great.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. If it is something, you just potentially could have saved several lives.
Yeah.
And so we had not too long ago, let's see, it was back in November 10th of 2020, we found a house in Cinco Ranch in Katy that was used as, it was the go-to place to groom and to negotiate trafficking. So they had all of these sexual advertisements that would go out at this house. They would take all the phone calls, negotiate where the victim and the buyer would meet up in a local hotel or a motel. And then that's the way that house was operating. Were there signs that somebody could have seen?
Yeah, were there?
Right. Well, yeah. Somebody reported it, and that's the way it got reported. So we should all be ready and willing to just kind of make that report.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't have to be
confronting
them. And
it's just a phone call.
It is a phone call to our human trafficking detectives with the DA's office.
Okay. Yeah. That's good to know.
Yeah. You know, as a community, we talk about it. We are concerned. But we really need to step forward and take action. That is what is lacking.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned your community a couple times. Like, we should have a We have at the Fort Bend County DA's office, we have what's called sex trafficking talks in Fort Bend County. If one of your groups that you're involved in wants to have us come out, we will have the DA's office comes out. Yeah. They're detectives that actually, they're attorneys that prosecute human trafficking crimes. They will come out and talk to the group.
Right.
We will have a survivor come and talk, and along with maybe a nonprofit that works in this space, so that the communities can begin to hear. Yes. The more that we talk about it, the more that we bring awareness, the more that we bring education, that's where we take the power away.
And the misconceptions that it's not going to happen in my community. This doesn't happen in our families. Yeah. Or no, we are so far from it. But not realizing that this can happen to anyone, right? So that is what we really need to raise awareness and to let people know. And then when really something does happen in the community, it's such a shocker. It's like, what? This happened?
Right, exactly. And, you know, another tip I try to tell people is, you know, first, if you see something that's an emergency, 911.
Yeah.
But also in your phone, put the National Human Trafficking Hotline number in your phone. Mm-hmm. Put it in there as a contact. Yeah. It is 1-888-373-7888. And you can also text. The number is 233-733. So you either text help or info. And we can put this all online. Put all this in a contact in your phone. And the reason why is if you're out, if you're about, if you see something, you want to be able to watch what's happening and know you have that contact in your phone to where you can click on that contact so you're not Googling, how do I report? What do I need to do? You have it there, and it's a safe place for to be there. So that's always a really, really good tip, is to have it in your contact information.
And so let's talk about the Red Sand Project before, you know, we run out of time.
So I actually brought y'all red sand.
Oh. Okay.
So I actually work, my actually paid job, that's not volunteer work, is I'm the anti-child trafficking consultant to Texas CASA. Okay. CASA are court-appointed special advocates, and we work with kids that are in the child welfare system. So my job is to work with kids in the child welfare system that are at risk or who have been trafficked. And so Molly Gokman created a national campaign called the Red Sand Project.
Okay.
And the logic was that so many times these cases fall through the cracks. In the month of January, what you do is you get red sand, and it doesn't have to be this special Red Sand Project sand. You can go to Hobby Lobby, you can go to Michael's, grab red sand. You fill in the cracks in a driveway, in a roadway. The district attorney's office is going to be covering, our team is going to be covering the Justice Center in the entrance in red sand. You fill it, you fill in the cracks of the red sand, and then you take a picture, take a video. You can be as creative as you want. Mm-hmm. But after you do that project, then what you do is you send it, and there is a little pamphlet that y'all will put up on Chai Time underneath here that gives over the descriptions of how to do the Red Sand Project. After you take that picture or video, you send it to CASAACTS@texascasa.org. That's actually me. And then hashtag Red Sand Project, hashtag CASAACT. What Texas CASA is going to be doing is they're going to be accumulating all these photographs and all these videos across the state of Texas, and they're going to push them out to everybody. So the more people doing the project, the better it will be. And so that's what the Red Sand Project is, and it is for January National Human Trafficking Awareness Month.
Okay, that's wonderful. So we'll have all that information on our Facebook page and our website
sounds
as
good.
Well.
Sounds
That'll
good.
Be great. All right, so any concluding remarks before we wrap up?
Let's see, how many minutes? We have 7 minutes to go. I will be really, really quick. You know, while sex trafficking does occur, it does. And an awareness in our community, it drastically decreases the risk to our family and to our friends. And I can tell you from working as a board member on Child Advocates of Fort Bend that when the most horrific thing does happen to your family, there are organizations out there that help. With the support of family, children are amazingly resilient when they get help. I know because I've dealt with the trauma of sex trafficking, but the trauma is devastating. But it's really the silence that kills your soul, and being quiet and not having anybody to talk to. And so it's mornings like this that is a breath of fresh air. You know, it may be cloudy outside, but we've got rays of sunshine coming in here because we are talking about this, and that's what will change the world.
Wow. That's a great way to end.
I know.
Thank you. You're welcome. You so much, Rhonda, for joining us this morning on Chai Time. It's, you know, this episode has been a real eye opener for us, very informative. And I think it's, you know, much needed here for all of us. And
what better way to start the year right? Exactly. Than with getting more information. Like you said, knowledge is power, and to have that power to change the world, you know. Like you said, one phone call could save so many people. So what better than that? So, yes, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome. Yes.
Yeah, we truly admire you. Your strength, your courage, your passion, everything. I mean, I've talked to you a couple of times, but every time I talk to you is just the passion that you have about, you know, about what you're doing and making that difference. And I think we can do it.
Yes.
If you can do it,
yes, we can do it. For sure. Yeah.
You know, okay, my favorite quote is from Helen Keller, and it's, alone you can do so little.
Yes.
Together you can do so much. True. So it's so true. Beautiful. Together.
Yeah.
You know, we all can't tackle it, but together we can. Together.
Yes. And this is the starting point for us, educating us and, you know, getting the knowledge about sex trafficking and getting to know more about it and all the misconceptions and, you know, that you have cleared up for us this morning and for our listeners as well. So
yeah, and instead of it, like from a parent perspective, being such a daunting topic, it's like, okay, now I think I have the knowledge to handle it and I have the resources, right, to help me navigate this topic. So yes, I think if even a few parents can take action and pass that on to their children, that would be.
We amazing. Never know what we prevent.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
That's the beauty of this.
That's truly. Yeah. So listeners, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Chai Time. And of course, we shall see you all next week, same time, same place. Signing off, this is Chai Time on 99.5 FM.